So my name's Sienna Facciolo. I'm a pianist and a vocalist. I'm also a piano teacher and a general music teacher and community organizer.
Perfect. Yeah. And so how did you get your start in music? Go as far back as you can remember.
Okay, so when I was really young, my mom would be playing music constantly, especially in the car and in the kitchen. We had a little CD player in the kitchen, and we had all our CDs. I shouldn't say ours. My parents had all their CDs in the cabinet above the CD player, and we would always put them in. And so I was singing with her from a very young age. And also my sister would join in, too. And so I've been always singing. And then when I was around, I think, 5 or 6, we had an upright piano in our living room, and I just started sounding out, like, Mary Had a Little Lamb and Twinkle Twinkle Little Star on the piano. Because they were songs I knew already, and I was like, oh, I can play them on here because it's notes. And once I had figured them out, I was like, Mom, come in here. So she came in, and I showed her, and she was like, all right, do you want to take piano lessons? And I said, yeah, that'd be cool. I didn't know what piano lessons were, if I could do more of that, what I had just done, I was like, definitely this sounds awesome. So I started piano at 6, like taking piano lessons, and I took lessons from a woman named Mary Jane Austin, who is classically trained, and she studied opera in her master's program. So very, and amazing. She was an amazing pianist, like one of the most musical pianists I've ever heard to this day still. So she really let me just like fly with my musicality, which was just invaluable to me because I was so naturally musical. And if someone had tried to like insert their own ideas about musicality into me at that point at a young age, I think it would have been really damaging. So I'm really, really grateful for her because she gave me the technical background that I needed, like the really strong classical technique that I needed to succeed. But then she also she trusted me, I guess, with my musicality, which was really important. So those were my beginnings. And I took lessons from her all the way up through when I was a senior in high school.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Yes. It was a long time.
Are there any, like, musicians or musical artists that kind of influenced you as you were growing up?
Yeah, this is a complex question because I was only playing classical piano, and I didn't start writing songs until I was I can't remember if it's 13 or 14. It's one of those years. And so up until I was 13 or 14, I didn't really see being influenced by a non-classical artist as a good thing. But now I realize that it is a good thing, and it's completely necessary, in my opinion. But at the time, I kind of thought that whenever I was improvising at the piano or trying out a pop song, I was, like, doing something wrong, which is not true, mm-hmm. But that's how I felt up until I was a teenager. Even when I was a teenager, even when I started writing music, I still felt that way. Okay, so that was a long introduction, but basically my influences, I really liked this woman named Dar Williams. She's a folk singer-songwriter. I listened to her albums all the time. I loved Sarah Bareilles. She was one of my heroes growing up. I also listened to a lot of Pete Seeger and Peter, Paul, and Mary, just like classic folk revival musicians, and bluegrass also. Mm. We had a lot of bluegrass albums and Celtic music. So just a wide variety, but a lot of folk, like earthy music of the people type of music.
Mm. Yeah. And I assume that's kind of the genre that that's the genre that you've stuck with as you are a musician now.
Yes, it is.
So did you come from like a musical family, or were you sort of the first of the bunch?
Yeah, my mom plays piano and she sings in choirs. So she sang in choirs and she does musical theater, and she did that all throughout my childhood, and she's still doing it now. Like she's in a professional choir now. And she plays piano just to practice her choir stuff. And, wow. Like, we've played piano duets over the years. And she also played clarinet back when she was in high school, and she did Allstate and all that stuff. And then my sister plays cello. She never played, like, the things that she was serious about were dance and photography. So she never, like, played cello, like, super seriously. But she was in the school orchestra. She was in a community orchestra. So I guess, like, I guess now that I'm saying that, she actually did play cello pretty seriously. But it was never the thing that she focused on most. But we actually did play some piano and cello together sometimes. Then my dad is not musical, but he's a great dancer and he has like really great rhythm. He just can't really sing like on tune in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And one time he tried to learn the bagpipes, which was an interesting period of life.
That must have been fun to hear him practice.
He would walk around the house like, meow. It didn't really work out, I have to say, but he did like persevere for a while. But bagpipes are really, it's a really hard instrument to learn. I don't know why he started with that. that was funny.
I mean, if you had to pick an instrument, you know, why not, right?
Right. It sounds cool. It's like loud and fun.
I mean,
yeah.
That would have been the most interesting family band ever.
Oh, definitely.
Bagpipes, cello, piano, vocals.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. But yeah, I actually take back what I said before. He is musical because he does love dancing, but he just doesn't play an instrument.
So that's really good. So, you know, you had this great musical support as you were growing
up.
Yes,
definitely.
And I think that probably helped you feed into your passion for music. Did you always want to be like a professional musician, or like going into the U of R, what were your plans for studying?
Okay, so that's a really interesting question. Probably most people have a more straightforward answer than me, but this is my answer. In kindergarten, I remember deciding this, that I wanted to be a singer and a kindergarten teacher. Those were my two career choices for myself as a kindergartner, because I love my kindergarten teacher and I love singing. So those are my two options. And definitely as I started playing piano, I started thinking of piano as my career, just music, playing piano. But it was always confusing to me what type of piano I wanted to play and in what context, because I had this really classical training, but the music I was really interested in was like these folk artists that I was listening to. So I was always very confused, wasn't sure what to do. Conservatories, you go and you basically study classical or jazz. So I was, and my teacher always wanted me to go to a conservatory. She was pushing me during high school to audition to conservatories. And I just didn't want to be held in one genre of classical music. So I never did the conservatory thing. And actually, right before I decided to come to U of R, right before I applied to U of R, I was going to apply to a lot of conservatories. I was like, now's the time. I'm transferring from McGill. I have 2 years left. Like, it's a perfect time to get a conservatory degree. But then I realized after a couple months of that decision that it would be too limiting for me. I know a lot of people go to conservatory so that they can have this tunnel vision and they can just become the best classical pianist they can be. And it makes a lot of sense for a lot of people, because you sit in a practice room and you just do your thing and you just practice your craft, and that makes sense for people. But for me, that's not how I want to become a musician. I want to become a musician by listening to a lot of different types of music, being surrounded by people who are in love with a lot of different types of music, being surrounded by people who are looking at music through the lenses of everything they're interested in, instead of just through the lens of this is going to be performed for a huge audience, or this is going to be performed for a jury, or this is going to be performed for, I don't know, an audition or a competition. I really wanted to learn about music and experience music like through a human lens, not through a performance lens.
Kind of like,
so that's why I decided to come to River Campus.
It's kind of like the difference of like learning to write essays versus to write stories.
Yeah. Yep, definitely.
Yeah, yeah, very cool.
Not to bash essays. I love essays.
No.
but that's definitely true. That's a good,
you know, they both analogy. Are valid, but they serve different purposes for different people.
Yes.
So you went to McGill.
I did. I went to McGill for 2 years. Yeah.
Okay. I'm Canadian. I'm from Toronto,
oh,
actually.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so my parents,
nice.
My dad went to McGill. My parents grew up in Montreal, but
nice.
They moved to Toronto and they had me.
Yeah.
But yeah, where were you studying at McGill before?
So my first year at McGill, I had just come out of a year off from high school. Mm-hmm. So I took a year off, and the reason for the year off was to figure out what I wanted to do in college.
No problem. Yeah.
Yeah, so I had a job in an environmental policy consulting firm.
Wow.
And I loved it. And I also had a job teaching piano. I was just private teaching. And basically just just to compare the two and see which one I like doing more. And the environmental policy job, it seemed like the owner of the company and my boss was just like very comfortable. She didn't have to worry about anything. She didn't have to piece together a living. And I was like, that seems pretty cool. Like, I want to have a family someday and I want to be able to provide for them in like a really solid way. So I think I'm going to do this environmental policy thing. So I went to McGill, studied environmental policy for the first year, and I loved it. It was really great. But by the end of the year, I just didn't feel like myself. I felt like I was stagnant. Like, I just felt like I wasn't expressing what I wanted to express in the world. I wasn't, like, fitting into the world how I wanted to. And it makes sense because I had just chosen this major. I mean, I was excited about the subject, actually. But I had mostly chosen it because it seemed, I can't think of the word, it seemed stable.
Mm.
And I thought it would be easier to have a stable life, rather than spending my life making art and sharing art and teaching art, which is, it's not that it's not stable financially, because I think that's a myth. I think it's just less stable emotionally, because you're just constantly, you constantly have your like shirt sleeves rolled up and like you're like kind of digging around in your own muck and like other people's muck, and you're just kind of like trying to express how we're human, and it's really hard. So anyway, then I transferred into the music program at McGill. I didn't like the music program at McGill because it
understandable.
Because it was too classical for me, and I felt like I was being limited. So I got out of there and I took another year off, and then I came to U of R.
Wow, I mean, that's quite the journey.
Yes, I was really trying to figure out how I could best serve the world. Like I was, that was like a main goal of mine, and also how I could best serve myself. It's not that I'm like selfless or something. I just, I'm like a very serious person. So if I'm not doing something that feels right, I need to change it, like, very soon.
It takes a lot of courage to, like, recognize that and, like, take action to make that change.
Yeah, it was really hard.
And definitely, like, a lot of musicians definitely come up with the ideas, like, I could do something, you know, stable, or I could do art, and it's going to continue to be on people's minds as long as art exists.
Definitely.
But it's really great to hear that you sort of found your stride and took your place in it. So this is kind of like a U of R specific question. Like, I don't know if it's was the same when you were there, not that we were really that far apart, but you know, the U of R is kind of seen as like a very STEM focused campus, and a lot of times people think that the humanities on campus don't have a lot of breathing room. So what was that like being a music major at the U of R?
Okay, that's such a great question, because I think it's so funny that the U of R is STEM focused, because when I applied to the U of R, I didn't know that. I mean, I knew that the sciences were really strong. I knew that there were a lot of engineering students. I knew all of that, but I didn't ever feel that when I was at the U of R. I visited, I met with a few music professors on River Campus. I had a lesson with an Eastman professor to see if I liked the lesson style that he gave. And I was just so focused on the music thing, and the music department is so strong at U of R. I just really didn't, it did not compute that I was doing something that U of R wasn't known for. I just can't even, I can't even fathom why it's not known for music, the River Campus, because I mean, I applied, I had the choice between U of R, Oberlin, UVM, and Wesleyan. Those were the choices. And Oberlin has an amazing music program, right? And so does Wesleyan. They both have, especially Wesleyan's ethnomusicology program, they're really strong. But U of R's program was so, like, comprehensive. Wesleyan and Oberlin, I feel like, have their specialties, but they weren't as, I don't know, I don't want to, I think they're great schools. But they just weren't what I wanted, basically. I guess I can say that. That's, like, how I made the decision. But when I actually got to U of R, I really felt so supported as a music major by the school, like, by the administration and by my professors. I never felt like, oh, we're not known for music. Like, we're not going to put that much resource into your passion. Like, it's not that important. I never felt that way.
It seems very nebulous, this idea that is perpetuated that the U of R doesn't care about humanities.
Yeah, I think it's, I don't think it's actually true on the ground on the River Campus. But that, I also, I have to say that every, I don't know, people should take what I'm saying with a grain of salt, because I am a very intensely self-directed person, and like if I want something, I will find it, and I will, it's not that I will get it, but I will like try to make it happen. I will do everything that I can to make it happen. So I wanted a specific type of experience at U of R, and I made it happen. Like I worked my, can I say ass or no?
Probably not.
Okay, I worked my butt off to make it happen. So I think you have to have a certain mentality going to any college, not just the U of R, just any college where you are the main catalyst for your own experience versus the university is the main catalyst for your experience, mm-hmm. I would say. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. What you saw in the U of R's program had more opportunity for you to do what you want, whatever.
Yeah.
Have the opportunity to figure that out along the way.
Right. And I could, as soon as I met the professors and talked to some of them on the phone, I knew it just, they were so like genuine, and they were so willing to listen to me and listen to my own ideas. I knew that they would support me in what I wanted to do.
The same thing with, you know, your piano teacher, how you felt that you were allowed to explore your own ideas.
Exactly. Yeah.
So being at the U of R and doing music, what was your first foray into like the Rochester music scene off campus?
Okay, so my first semester at U of R was fall 2017. I really was just focusing on just doing academic work, so I wasn't, and also practicing classical piano. I had a teacher, I'm actually still working with her, a piano teacher at Eastman, Elizabeth Kreka. She's a DMA candidate. And I was taking primary piano lessons from her. So I was really just focused. I wasn't doing any songwriting. I was just focused on like academic stuff. But then come winter break of my first year at U of R, I actually decided that I wanted to create an album because I realized we have Rettner on campus and I have a lot of songs and I've always wanted to create an album. And I miss playing out. I miss performing my songs out in the city, because in Montreal I would do that. I would go to cafes and I'd perform my songs, and I did that a bunch. And so yeah, I really missed that sharing with the audience thing and that expression. So during winter break, I planned this whole thing. Like I planned this schedule of when I wanted to record each song. And I, when I got back in January, I contacted every music venue I could think of in the city. I got a bunch of cafe gigs. I got the Little Theater. I played at the Little Theater. I played at Starry Nights, I played at Brew, I just played at a lot of different places. Got my name out there a little bit, met a bunch of people in the Rochester music scene, like Dan Gross came to my one of my shows and I became friends with him. And also I started dating this person who was in Juicy Connotation, which was like a pretty well-known band in Rochester at that time. Well, they still are, but now they're, you know, doing their own thing. Mm-hmm. His name's Chris Palace, and I'm playing with him a lot now, but he introduced me to a lot more people, and we started playing together, and I started playing with Jordan Rabinowitz, who's the bass player in Juicy Connotation, who's an amazing bass player. So I started, like, putting out feelers. They also are U of R grads.
Cool.
Just so you know. I started just meeting a lot of other people and playing at a lot of other places, and in February, I believe, or maybe March, I started recording the album in Rettner. In the Rettner Music Studio.
Cool.
Yeah. Does that answer your question?
Yeah,
that was kind of a long, winding answer.
No, that's perfect.
Okay.
One of the things that I'm always thinking about is like the tone and the atmosphere in Rochester. And from all the people I've talked to, there's this very like, oh, like, who are you? What's your deal? And like, how can we help?
Yeah, it really is like that. It really, once you meet a couple of people, they really just want to help you.
That's really good to hear. Thank you.
Yeah, even I was a student. I wasn't even like a professional musician at that point, and they were still really willing.
And so through this time too, were you still doing lessons and teaching music?
Yeah, I didn't have any private piano students at that point because I was still trying to just focus on my own learning. But I was still taking piano lessons from Elizabeth Kreka, yeah.
So let's talk about your album, Dear House.
Okay.
So from what I gather, one of the big aspects of the album is the audience listening to that and forming their own experiences based off what they hear, and that in a way becomes a part of like the music you've written.
Yes, that's so true. Yes, the reason I play music is because it allows that space to happen. It allows this like collaborative thing to happen, And even though sharing music and playing it out at shows is really tiring because it takes so much out of me, it really does pay off because the audience like can feel that I'm putting myself out there, and then they can put themselves out there in the same space. And even if they don't share it with me, like even if they don't talk to me afterwards, it's still happening. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, what makes it so special. And when I can go to a show and feel that when I'm watching another musician, I think that's like really, really special.
These wooden floors have held our weight. They've heard our fears. And the love we create lines the ancient doors, which tend to be so near. Our house resting strong on the hill.
For example, the title track, Dear House, you wrote that about the house that your parents sort of bought and restored.
Yeah.
And it's such a vivid story of like what it's like living in this very expressive house environment that is almost like a family member of its own.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
If you have anything to say about that.
Wow, you said it really well.
Sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, I'm so happy that you're saying that. It's awesome. So I agree with you, I think, that music, it's impossible for music not to be personal. Even if you try to make it not personal, I think it's a failed attempt. I think it's just going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And even with classical music, I think if you don't put yourself into what you're playing, it's just going to sound like a copy of something, which mm-hmm. it is. It is a copy of something, but you have to put yourself into it. Even if you play all the notes completely correctly. And yeah, so Dear House was actually a really easy song to write. It took me like a very short amount of time because it was just in me, I guess, already.
Mm-hmm.
And I just needed to write it down and record it. Yeah, I really wanted to express how I feel about spaces and houses and homes, because to me, home is like a really poignant idea. Poignant, maybe. Yeah, poignant and also powerful. Not just sad, but also really powerful and really grounding. And I've always found a lot of strength in my family. So I wanted to combine all of those ideas and put it into a song.
Mm.
Like to me, it's been hard in my life to separate myself from my family. Like the core of myself kind of feels like it's very intertwined with my family.
One of your songs, Kyoto.
I'm glad you've heard that song. Cool.
Yeah, I was looking at your performances the little, and I saw you had your full band behind you.
Yes.
And it's pretty groovy.
Thanks.
Do you want to maybe talk about the story behind it?
Yeah, so Kyoto, I would say, is me kind of coming out of my folk shell and moving into this new space where I've been listening to a lot of soul music in the past year and a half, a lot. That's mainly what I listen to. And soul and gospel, a lot mm-hmm. of gospel. Yeah, a lot of Aretha Franklin, a lot of Janis Joplin, a lot of like newer people who I can't think of right now. Well, okay, like her and, you know, just people, Leon LaHavas,
mm-hmm.
People who are doing really cool things that aren't like one genre necessarily, but they have a lot of power behind them, like vocal power and spiritual power and cultural power, and I wanted to start writing music that actually incorporated the things that I love and like really connect to about that music. And Kyoto was one of the first products of that desire. And also my dad really, you probably heard this in the video, mm-hmm. in the introduction, but he really has always wanted me to sing the blues. And I've always loved that idea, but I've never really done it. And so I was like, well, I'll just write a song, a blues song, and then I'll sing the blues.
I think it
worked out really well. Yeah, I definitely want to do more of that.
It definitely tracks what you're saying. You have all these artists who are putting everything in their being into the music. It's just, again, an intensely personal experience. What was it? So from my understanding, you recorded the album like it was everyone together. It wasn't just like track by track.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I did that. Yeah. And I did not realize how unique that was until after I finished recording it. And I was listening to, I don't know, interviews of other musical artists who had recorded albums. And I was also listening to other albums. And I was realizing that these other albums were not recorded live in one room. And honestly, I just didn't know that it would be done another way, to be honest, which is why I'd recorded it live. But I did record it live because I wanted all of the energy of all of the performers in the room to be captured in the recording. I didn't want just the rhythm section to play something and then I would record vocals afterwards, but they wouldn't have gotten the power or the emotion from my vocals until they heard the album. I just didn't think that was realistic. Like, it wouldn't give a realistic emotional snapshot for the listener, if that makes sense.
It's sort of like the sum of the parts, like the whole is greater than just the individual sum of the parts.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really hard to do recording because you're in there in this blank room. You have no audience. You have zero like inspiration. All of the inspiration has to come from inside yourself. So if you have other musicians in the room with you and you're all looking at each other and like making facial expressions and like if the drummer and the bassist can see your facial expressions while you're like belting out a really intense part, that's so important, I think. But I do have to say, doing it live made it a lot harder in the mixing and mastering process because there was a lot of bleed and, you know, it was very challenging. So I spent a lot of hours after recording it, like with the mixing engineer.
Do you think you would record that way again?
Yeah, I haven't decided. I think I will probably do a mixture for the next
album.
Probably
middle ground.
Yeah, I think I think I'll do a mixture. Some of the songs that I'm writing now require more of a like groove and more of a pocket. I have been doing a lot of experimental music, like improvising with Chris, doing this like avant-garde jazz contemporary craziness. And I'm really excited to see where it will lead. I don't know where it's going to lead yet, but we really want to actually create songs and record it or perform it at some point. But yeah, it's nice to improvise with someone and not feel like you're confined by one genre. Mm-hmm. And it's totally different than what my album is, which is really fun. Yeah, and it's a huge challenge. Sometimes I'll be like improvising and I'll have no idea what my hands are doing, but they're just like doing stuff on their own from like habit of just years of practicing. And then I listen to recording afterwards. I'm like, that sounded so sick. That was so cool. So yeah, it's nice to just like be able to let go and like not worry about anything for a little bit and improvise, which when I'm singing at the same time can sometimes like not be recording quality. Like I sometimes maybe like it's a syncopated groove and I'm trying to sing a straight line, like a straight melody line, and the syncopation might be like slightly late, and for a recording that wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. For a live show it's totally fine because it's like raw and real and it's normal, but for a recording, like, people expect it to be perfection. Because I'm starting to write songs that are, I guess, like more rhythm based, and singing over that is harder. I recorded a song in May for the next album called Winter Woods, and it's actually the first song that I co-wrote with my band. So I wrote it with Chris Pallas and Jordan Rabinowitz, and it was really fun to write it with them. But yeah, we started out me singing vocals like I always do and playing piano, and they were Jordan was in a different room, but Chris was in the same room. We could all see each other. It was all glass. But after a while, we realized that the groove was just, like, a little bit off because I was trying to do these, like, very complicated vocals, like, improvising vocals and improvising piano at the same time. And we were like, let's just record the instrumental. And, yeah, so I still have to record the vocals for that. I don't know if people are supposed to admit these things to other people, but I guess I'm doing it, so
it's
I don't really care.
It's very human.
Yeah.
It's very normal.
I think it's fine.
Yeah, I think it's cool, too. You know, everyone has, like, a different process for writing and recording music, and some people are very much paint by the numbers, and some people are very much, we have to feel it out and see how it works.
Right. I think it's all an experimentation. Like, everything is an experiment. We're just doing things and seeing if they work out.
Because if you're experimenting, you're learning.
Yeah, exactly. It's all... I'm learning so much every time I play music, yeah.
Speaking of learning, you're starting a teaching position.
Yes.
Right. So how did you land the job? What are some of the circumstances surrounding that?
Okay. I am so excited about this job. I cannot wait to meet the students. I'm starting to teach the students on Monday. They're coming in on Monday, and it's going to be their first time being in the school because it's a new charter school.
Wow.
No students have ever taking classes here before. No teachers have ever taught. It's just opening up on Monday. And I've been in professional development training for it for 2 weeks now. And we have an amazing team of teachers, and I'm so, so pumped. It's a huge opportunity for me specifically because I don't have any formal education in classroom teaching. So for me, it's going to be like a huge learning experience. And I think that's why the principal hired me, because she knows that because it's going to be such a huge learning experience, I'm going to put my whole self into it. Mm-hmm. And she also knows that I put my whole self into everything anyway. There's just so much to say about it. Oh, how did I get into it?
Yeah.
Okay. So actually my boyfriend, Chris, found the job on Indeed because he's always looking on Indeed just in case. And he sent it to me. And it was just the perfect job for me. It was exactly everything I had ever wanted, except for classroom teaching, because I wasn't sure if I was going to like classroom teaching. So I was a little nervous about that. I'm not nervous anymore about it. I'm really excited. But I applied. It was a very long interview process that I really enjoyed, because as soon as I had the video interview with the principal, I just knew I really wanted to work with her.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, I need to learn from you. It's just, it has to happen. I really connected with her a lot. So I was so, so happy when I got the job. I actually got the job right after I did a trial lesson. So I prepared a 15-minute lesson plan. And I actually went into a pre-existing charter school and taught a group of sixth grade students this 15-minute lesson. And that experience was so hard, but so fun. It just made me realize, like, how much I wanted this position. And I worked so hard on that lesson plan. I practiced it with a timer. I practiced it in front of other people. I contacted all of the music teachers I had had in the past, sent them the lesson plan, even non-music teachers. I sent them the lesson plan. I was like, please give me advice. And I also contacted colleagues I had had at McGill who were my age, who were just starting classroom teaching. And I was like, give me advice, because I know you did this music education degree and I need help. And they all sent me feedback, and I incorporated most of the feedback. And at the end, I had this, like, really solid lesson plan that I'd practiced a lot. And I went into the classroom, and, like, actually meeting the kids was just so fun. And right after I taught the lesson, I got a lot of feedback from the principal. And then she was like, so we want to offer you the position. And I think it was the happiest moment of my entire life. I couldn't even deal with how happy I was. I was, like, floating out of the building. And I literally, when I got out of the building, I don't remember exactly what I did, but it was something like, ah, or, like, something. And then when I got into my car, I was like, I got the job, I got the job, I got the job. I was just so happy. So, and I still feel, like, really excited.
Well,
too excited.
It seems like you've had so many good teachers in your life, from your piano teacher and your professors at the U of R,
mm-hmm.
that you know what, I mean, you know how you like to be taught, and you know what a good teacher looks like.
Yeah.
And you're able to bring that experience to these kids. So what age are you going to be teaching?
Fifth grade. Yeah, the whole school, actually, since it's new, and it's just one grade this year, the whole school is just fifth grade. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is like the prime age to sort of like inspire kids to go into music. I mean, it kind of helps too that you were there as like a musician and a music teacher first versus like a teacher who also like does music, which I think is kind of the power of like having a charter school where you can have all these people from different experiences who might not have the formal education of being a teacher, but have like the knowledge and the experience and like the drive to share.
Yeah, we have a really great team of teachers who they really all believe in honoring people's culture and honoring like the students' experience and not just honoring like our own beliefs mm-hmm. about how school should be. So I think we're all like really dedicated to learning from the students and using that to teach the students in a way that makes sense for them and their culture and not just for us and our, I don't know, our own personal experiences or our own personal cultures or, yeah. Mm,
just because you're a teacher doesn't mean you have to stop learning.
Yeah, no, exactly. Right? Well, okay, the word for teach and learn is the same word in Swedish, lär. It's the and I think that makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. You're teaching, like teaching cannot exist without learning. It just can't. Mm. It's just impossible. Yeah. Right now I'm focusing mostly on teaching, mm-hmm. but I am playing at the Fringe, which I'm so excited about.
I noticed.
Yes.
That's
so
gonna be awesome.
I just wanted to mention that because I'm really excited. And I'm playing with Chris. Mm-hmm. So it's just gonna be a duo show and we're playing at Knox, which is a great venue. And yeah, I think it's a good thing to have only one show that you're getting ready for because it means that the show, well, it's actually four shows, but one event or festival that you're getting ready for because it means that I have something to focus on mm-hmm. that's for me and not for my students, which I think is good. I think it also will be hard to balance like the teaching and the rehearsing and practicing for the Fringe. So, but I'm always up for the challenge. It'll be fun.
My last, I guess, question would be, if you could go back and talk to like your younger self or even just talk to someone who was in your position when you were a kid and being like, wow, like I think music is something that maybe I want to do. Like, what would you say?
I think I would say if music is how you feel like you are yourself, then you should do it because being yourself is like, okay, being yourself is so vague and people use it a lot, but embodying what you know is true about yourself is way more valuable for the world than trying to do what you think you should do or trying to do what you think other people are doing or maybe even trying to do what you think will make the most money. Like, money doesn't matter. It just matters that you are, like, living authentically in the world somehow. And if you... hopefully, if you live authentically in the world, you will be happy, which is my main goal in life, is mm-hmm. to be happy. I guess that's what I would say. If it feels like this is how you are yourself, then you should definitely do it. Yeah, even if I've definitely had, I mean, I'm still having, like, days where I just totally resist this idea. And I'm like, it's so tiring, like, I just give so much, and I'm tired, and I don't... sometimes I don't want to practice or I don't know. Sometimes I'm just like complaining, but when it really comes down to it, this is how I am myself. So just, this is what I have to do.
Our house resting strong. Thank you.